Rick Ocasek is pretty much rock royalty in Boston. He's the frontman of the 80s mega band The Cars, and he's one of the most unassuming people I've ever interviewed. Really. Here's why. Throughout our interview, I'd been saying Rick Ocasek. And when we wrapped up, I asked him to say his name and title just so that we were sure to have that on tape. It's standard operating procedure at the end of recorded interviews. Now remember, I'd been pronouncing his name Rick Ocasek during the interview, so just listen to what he said.
Hi, this is Rick Ocasek, and I'm from The Cars.
Okay, first and foremost, I have to say you're such a gentleman because you didn't tell me that I've been pronouncing your last name wrong.
Oh, no, it's okay.
No, it's not okay. I'm so sorry.
No, people pronounce it a lot of different ways, and I care less how they pronounce it. And, you know, it's subjective as well because I have relatives who go, Otkasek. Otkasek. You know, there's a lot of different ways I guess people could say it. It is a weird spelling.
Well, you've been so cool
about
it. It's
not really
it,
wrong or right. I mean, I think my family says Ocasek, so that's the way I say it.
I'm going to go back and reintroduce you and get it right now. But Rick Ocasek, welcome to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
Rick Ocasek has a new book out called Lyrics and Prose. It's a compilation of every Cars song Ocasek ever wrote, plus his musings in verse and prose. Ocasek calls it something of an autobiography. So when we talked, I first asked him to walk us down memory lane. I'd love to hear from you. Why is it that you did, back in 1972, decide to come to Boston?
Ben and I lived in Ann Arbor, Michigan at the time. We had a band called Leatherwood. And oddly enough, we used to open for Iggy Pop and the MC5. And we had to kind of a band that kind of wrecked your equipment. Thought we were, you know, pretty kind of hard stuff. But anyway, when it was time to get rid of or move... We sort of ran out of money and pawned over equipment. And all I had left was an acoustic. And I knew that Cambridge was a good place to come with an acoustic guitar because I'd heard that you can play at Club 47 and you could play at, Passiums and all those places if you had an acoustic guitar. So we ventured to Boston in 1972, or probably 71 or 2. Arrived in Harvard Square and heard the Modern Lovers playing on the Common.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, this is the place for me. The Modern Lovers are here. It's unbelievable. So we just kind of played on our own for a while, just Ben and I, acoustically.
Yeah.
And we managed to just scrape by while we were there, but we loved the city, so that's how we got there.
There's a story which I'm dying to know if it's true or not, but I've read that in 74, you and Ben Orr were playing as a duo at a Boston Ground Round restaurant on the South Shore, and you guys were playing until a vice president or a manager stopped you one night, or actually he stopped in one night of the company, and he said you couldn't play anymore because you weren't family friendly entertainment. Is that true?
Yeah, it is.
What were you singing?
It is true.
What were you singing?
I don't know. We were just we were always playing, even when we played those places in Boston in the beginning. We told people that we played top 40 stuff so we could get the gig. But then when we went there, we never played any of that. We just played my own songs. Some people thought they were top 40, and they just missed it. That was probably the reason. We kind of got fired from a bunch of places.
That's amazing to me that you guys ever played at a Ground Round. But
We played the Ground Round quite a few times because the Ground Round actually paid. Because they could actually pay for it. So, you know.
Not bad, actually.
So we played a ground round. It was a weird place to play.
And obviously the rest is history, because the Cars go on to be this super group of the 80s.
Dancing down the street with your sway blue eyes.
Talking about the story behind a song on, of course, the Cars' debut album, maybe one of your most beloved songs, and that is My Best Friend's Girl.
Here she comes again.
When she's dancing beneath the stormy sky.
Ask you about it because I'm looking in the new book, Lyrics and Prose, and there it is on page 5, the printed text of My Best Friend's Girl. But on the facing page, there's a photograph of what I gather to be, what is that, the original manuscript of the song?
Oh, yeah, quite possibly, yeah.
Yeah. It looks like the original song title was Best Friend's Girl, and someone hand wrote the word in my in front of that.
Yeah. That's true. It must have been me.
So,
I guess that my had to be there.
But it wasn't there to begin with?
I don't know. Maybe not. Oh, I think maybe when I was, you know, once you start singing the song and all that stuff, maybe I was throwing in a my, so I thought I better put the my in there.
But why don't you tell me the story of you know, the process or the background or what inspired the song?
Well, that's a good question. I could never remember that. That's like 100 years ago. But you know, songs. When I write songs, I usually write a lot at a time. I could write anywhere from 20 to 30 songs at a time. You know, songs. All the songs are kind of a little autobiographical, although I. I don't know that any songs I've ever written have been situations that I thought I needed to document because they were sort of historical in my mind or an historical moment.
Mm-hmm.
Although, maybe so, if I lead through, maybe
yeah.
So.
Let the good times roll. Let the lucky ring round.
So the book, it's not just lyrics, it's called Lyrics and Prose. Do you have the book there in front of you or with you?
I kind of do. Somebody just handed it to me.
Okay, great. Because we're talking about sort of prose. Mm-hmm. I'd love it if you could read one of the prose pieces in the book called Paul's Bakery.
I'm sitting here at Paul's Bakery watching the blizzard and waiting for the studio to open. Everyone's late when the New England snow blows. I'll probably work on the same song for the rest of my life, all songs being one. Hume said that the entire world is in one's mind. All knowledge comes from sensory impression rather than a prior aspect of reality. You don't see time, for instance. So what's the rush? Time is close. Things get quiet when it snows. Time seems to stand still, like when your mind sleeps between thoughts. So let's talk about envy and jealousy and girlfriends and music. misunderstanding, art, money, trips, death, and slime balls. Muscles, cheap talk, friends, videos, leather, business, skin, purpose, rain and bombs, lawyers, notes and sounds, rhythm, drugs, booze, fights, life, environments, pleasure, rumors, images, pressure, guns, style, escape, movement, junkies, losers, motivation, jobs, and God, and smoke, and differences, and eyes, and the future, and illusions, and waste traps, and focus, and feeling, and time. It's still snowing outside Paul's Bakery, but I could suck in the smell of this place for a trillion picoseconds. Everyone's late when the New England snow blows.
So that's Rick Ocasek reading his work, Paul's Bakery, from, it appears in the new book, which is kind of more an anthology called Lyrics and Prose. I've heard that you really don't consider yourself to be kind of a front and center entertainer, that rather, right. Like that you're, that's not who you are. So how would you describe what you consider yourself to be?
Tall.
No, actually, I should have expected that. Tall, handsome, dark haired.
Oh, I don't know about the handsome. I don't get any awards for that. But anyway, I consider myself a writer, a songwriter, for sure. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to do. I started writing songs, I think. I attempted to write a song when I was 14. I never got to. Once I decided to play music, I immediately thought, well, I don't care if I can play the instrument. I just want to write songs. I've never considered myself a musician, although I can play a lot of things. I'm not a school musician, nor can I read music, but I always wanted to write whole songs and be a songwriter, and I always knew that no matter what band I was ever in, it was going to be a band that played the songs I wrote. And of course, in the early days, they weren't very good songs, but I put a lot of bands through a lot of crap to make them play them until finally, years and years after having a half a dozen bands, finally the songs got good enough.
You ended up being essentially the front man for one of the biggest rock groups of a generation.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how that happened.
Well, the new book is Lyrics and Prose. Rick Ocasek, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And that's our program today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com.
Our show is produced by Jessica Alpert, Amory Sievertson, Dina Rosendorf, and Alex Kingsbury.
Our interns are Darian Garay and Ava Aguado.
Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.